Welcome to the Near Post Local, where too much football is never enough. The grand finals might have finished and the domestic competition, but football has not stopped, hasn't even drawn breath, it's just moved off in a different direction. I'm Peter Funnell, and tonight we're going to have an extended interview with Heather Reid, the CEO of Capital Football. We've got a bit of catching up to do here, and there are some topics that simply need the input of the CEO of Capital Football. The first of those will be the future of the A-League bid for Canberra. We want to talk about the beginnings of the high performance program and the futsal high performance programs, which lead to the Nationals. We also want to talk about the Premier League license process, which closes this week and then goes into a period of evaluation. And Heather has some very interesting things to say about that. Some of them you may not know. Importantly, we need a really good, robust structure for our Premier League. We need to avoid the pitfalls that have occurred in the last 3 years among some clubs and some arrangements between clubs. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get straight into this interview with Heather Reid. We're talking to Heather Reid, the CEO of Capital Football. We're going to discuss a few topics that are bubbling around the football world in Canberra. Heather, the grand finals are finished. No surprises with the men's, so pass by them straight away.
Although I must say, congratulations to Canberra FC. It was a terrific year for them, as was last year, although they got pipped in the grand final by O'Connor last year. But as one of the stalwarts of Canberra FC, previously Canberra Deacon, reminded me, it's been a tremendous decade for that club. Really, really solid performance over the past 10 years. And I'm not sure where they go to from here. I know they still like to get into the New South Wales League, but they provide great competition for everybody else. And they really do force other clubs to lift their game and raise the bar.
Well, they certainly do. I recall seeing them at the bushfire appeal game against the Melbourne Knights. They're playing good football then, and I went home with my hand in my head wondering how on earth we're going to compete with that. Well, of course, we didn't. They didn't get any worse.
That's right. And then on the other side of the ledger, I mean, the women's grand final, we moved the women's to a standalone weekend, and we had the State League one, which Belconnen won, and full credit to Belconnen. And then finally, that's about the only thing I could say, finally Western Creek managed to beat Bell West in their fifth or the sixth attempt. Didn't have to go to extra time, didn't have to go to a penalty shootout, and all credit to Western Creek for beating Bell West.
Well, the last 5 weeks of the Women's Premier League was a mad race. It wasn't like anything like the rest of the competition. The red-hot specials, Waden Valley, nosedived, and Western Creek came up on the outside, as the racing people like
or
to
you,
say.
Or you could perhaps call them the turtles, I suppose, the slow and steady. But they only had about 3 wins, I think, and 5 draws. But when it came to the crunch, they beat Woden Valley in the semi-final.
They did.
Caught Woden Valley, I think, in a very sleepy, lethargic state that day. But let's not take away the fact that Western Creek beat them. It was 2-0, I think, in the end.
It was, yes.
Personally, I thought Western Creek looked the better team on Saturday going against Bell West. They had far more shots on goal. They had the first corners of the game. Louisa Marzotto was terrific whenever she did have to make any saves for Western. Jenny Brew had a great game. And of course the Julie Murray medal player, Rachel Crittenden, was just outstanding. She matched the young Hope Wilkins and Yeoman Dale up front for Bell West. They relied a lot on those two fast players up front. And Crittenden and the rest of the defence had their measure on the day.
Oh, fairy tale ending. Couldn't be better, really.
Well, always the bridesmaids, and I think they've shaken the monkey off their back. And, this is a club, too. Let's not forget that Western Creek has the Guinness Book of Records for the most consistent Premier Leagues over 12 years. They won the women's competition. I think St George Rugby League Club might have been in the books before, but 12 consecutive premierships. It's been a long time between drinks for them, so they celebrated hard.
Well, I won't complain about Waden again. The hot topic, of course, is the A-League for Canberra bid. Could I lead this way and say, following the World Game on SBS yesterday, it seemed to me that Canberra was pretty much a shot duck at odds of 150 to 1 and Tasmania 200 to 1. Where are we at? do you think?
Well, I think that's a fairly telling sign that we've been talking about some time. There are elements within the football community, and particularly, I suppose, within the Sydney football community, that have always really wanted to have the 12th licence go to a team in Sydney, Western Sydney, Central Sydney, wherever. So I think the media speculation over the last few weeks, as we've seen on the World Game on SBS, as well as some articles in the Sydney Morning Herald, confirms some of the conjecture that has indicated that really FFA and other people want that 12th licence in Sydney. It's very disappointing from a Canberra point of view. I think Ivan Slavich and the A-League for Canberra people have put in a tremendous amount of work and time and personal resources, only to continue to be stalled or put off with an expectation that either their bid isn't strong enough or perhaps they've been wasting their time because FFA really wants the 12th licence to go to Western Sydney.
The mantra that's been chanted at Canberra is, well, you know, we still have financial concerns. Have they been able to articulate precisely what they are?
What I can say that is that my understanding is that there's about $4.5 million on the table, $2.5 million committed as underpinning funding from the ACT government.
Yeah.
There are a number of potential stakeholders who are probably waiting to get the licence across the line first before they'll actually put their investment on the table. That's really not what Ivan would like. He wants them to put their money up front. Well, not well, to at least give some sort of...
Some pledge,
that's right. And probably a pledge of at least $500,000 from some of these big money people in Canberra. They're holding off waiting, and I think that's been disappointing for Ivan. We tick all the boxes, I think, in every other respect. We've got a great stadium in Canberra Stadium.
In spite of the fact that it's not square.
In spite of the fact, that's right. But we've got great football community in Canberra, but the whole region. In addition to that, we've also got the basis of a very strong team of local talent. When you look at the Canberra players who are now running around in the A-League, there's about 10 or 11 players. And I was really interested to see in the recent lists for the National Youth League, there are also about 11 players from Canberra that are now playing in A-League clubs throughout Australia in that National Youth League competition.
But they don't seem to want us.
Well, that seems to be the message, perhaps not for 2010. For the A-League bid.
I wouldn't want to hold my breath.
That's right. But, I mean, also at the same time, we really have to look at the reality of having an A-League club. I've always maintained that from the heart and the emotional side, we really want an A-League club in Canberra. But from the pocket, the money side, it's incredibly difficult to deliver $6 million to $8 million, which is really what FFA is asking every licence to put on the table. Mm. We now see some attempt to try and have FFA intervention in the 12th licence in Sydney. I think that's what I heard on the World Game yesterday.
That's exactly what I heard. Mm. And I found that extraordinary, actually. It seemed as though someone shifted the rules again. I don't know, I'm not close to it, but if the bottom line consideration against Canberra was not about the playing strength, not about the facilities, it was about put your $6 million down first as your seed funding, make sure you can demonstrate to us that you can produce $6 million in operating costs per annum, and if that couldn't be produced by, if you like, the last bid standing in Western Sydney, then the FFA stepping in would seem to me to the clear signal to Canberra that our bid was not going to get there. Is that a fair summary?
Well, I think you can surmise that from the media report yesterday, yes. Mm. And also in some of the, you know, Mike Cockerell Sydney Morning Herald articles.
Yes.
I mean, he basically called on FFA a couple of weeks ago to, you know, put money up. I mean, it's well known that Chairman Frank Lowy is also, you know, the man behind Westfield Shopping Centres. Westfield was born out of a shopping centre in Blacktown, the western suburbs of Sydney. And if Frank Lowy and the people in FFA really wanted the 12th licence to go to a Western Sydney team, then perhaps he personally or his empire could in fact support that and make that happen. If it can't do that, then give the licence to Canberra, was the final paragraph in that article. You know, you have to say, well, FFA wants the 12th licence in Sydney because it's greater population, there's greater capacity to get bums on seats, there's greater capacity for people to buy Foxtel subscriptions, etc., etc. So it's the commercial push that is coming from them, and they probably don't feel they've got the same commercial clout or impetus if the team was based in Canberra.
That's the impression I have too, talking to people.
Yeah.
I don't know how we jump over that.
I remember when Ivan Slavich was first looking at the bid documentation and the questions that needed to be addressed, and you know his response, whether it was glib or whether it was serious, was, well, you know, you look at the first question, they want to know this, and it basically comes down to money. The second question was such and such, and it comes down to money. The third question was relevant, and you get the sort of drift. It all came down to how much money you've got and how much money are you going to be able to generate, as well as sustain. This is, remember, this is the long term. It's not just a 1 or 2 year fly-by-night kind of thing. It's the long-term commitment for a team in Canberra. In saying that, is everything lost if we don't have a team in Canberra in the A-League from 2010? Perhaps it's not. We've got a little bit more time to go back and generate that financial support. We've already seen, as I said, around about 20 players plus from Canberra playing in the A-League. Mm. The opportunities are there for local players to participate in the Youth League and the A-League. There's no guarantee that even a Canberra A-League team would consist 100% of Canberra players. In fact, I think that's a little bit of a myth if people think that a Canberra team is going to only have Canberra players. We have to have some quality international players, and we want to get the best players from around the country.
Well, it's going to be a professional football franchise.
In the similar way that Canberra United, in the first year we had 4 or 5 players from interstate. This year we've got 3 players from interstate, plus, of course, 2 international players. It's about getting the most competitive and the most highly performed team in the league.
With the resources to hand.
That's right.
Yeah.
And those resources in the A-League come down to around about $6 million to pay for the players, the staff, and manage the front office, etc.
Yeah, and that's something for everyone to think about. That is a lot of money to find every year.
Well, on that point, I can tell you, I had a chat with Peter Turnbull, one of the owners of Central Coast Mariners. He basically said that the Mariners, whilst they're reasonably successful in terms of their whole management and operations, they do make a small loss every year, and it's not surprising to know that they actually sell a player every single year in order to cover that loss.
The trade in football players underpins every big club's considerations.
Well, that's when the players truly become commodities. Yep. And that's the difference between what we're talking about with capital football running competitions that are essentially for amateur players, and then stepping up with an A-League licence where it's totally professional and the players are paid, the coaching staff are paid at market prices, and therefore they become commodities where they're bought and sold.
And that's an important distinction for the listener to mull over, really, because we are talking about a completely different level of football with the A-League. We're not talking about community level football.
Another good example is Kofi Danning. Now, Kofi Danning didn't come through any Capital Football High Performance Program or ACTAS. He did his groundwork basically through Canberra FC. He's now a rising star in the National Youth League. He'll be one of the key figures in the A-League in the not too distant future. Clubs that Kofi Danning has been part of throughout his junior development will start to receive a financial return through the compensation system his development.
Yeah, and so they should.
Yep.
Now, Heather, we spoke of the high-performance program in a sort of a glancing blow when we mentioned Mr. Danning. How are the high-performance program numbers looking? What's the situation since we last spoke?
Well, it's very encouraging, actually, Peter. I mean, I know we had a little bit of a hiccup. We had to put the whole trial process on hold for a few weeks, but we've been absolutely amazed with the numbers, particularly through the boys' ranks. I can say the boys under 12s, for example, the trial on the 21st of September, there were 75 players there trialling. The boys under 11s, there were 63 players. And the similar sort of stats for the boys 14s, 15s, huge numbers, giving our technical staff and the coaches some challenging times. But it's very, very encouraging, and there's no doubt that we will certainly be able to cater for North and South training programs right across all the ages for the boys. The numbers for the girls, particularly 9s, 10s and 11s, haven't been that strong. But that's okay. We'll there's still the numbers there. It probably means that there won't be as rigorous selection process. People won't miss out, hopefully, in being part of this program.
I just wonder why that is.
Well, I think personally it's largely because we actually put the program on hold for 3 weeks, and during that time, Curva coaching programs were advertised and closed, and you only have to go to University of Canberra on a Sunday afternoon and just see the masses of kids participating in the Curva coaching clinics, prepared to pay large amounts of money for these kids to go through for the intensive skill development program. Yeah. So we and lots of girls involved in those Curva clinics that I've seen. So we probably lost a little bit there, but it's also very new. Remember, 9s, 10s, and 11s is a new thing anyway.
Yes, yes.
So the expectation expectation that girls would be involved in that is also something that is relatively unique, I guess. But there's no doubt that we will have very strong programs. We've got most of the coaches in place. They may not be of the same caliber as our NTC coaches, like Milo or Lino, but we've got the coaches in place. They're really keen to learn and develop through this program. We had a very successful North Zone club meeting last week. Yep. We're convening a South Zone club meeting this week. In fact, tonight clubs are meeting to discuss how they can actively support the Capital Football High Performance Program over summer and how they can actually build underpinning development programs through their club structure as a result of players missing out on our program. They'll pick them up through their own clubs.
Yes, that's an important add-on or continuation of that high performance process. And speaking to Pat McCann last week, the S2S software that's obviously going to underpin a lot of training, development, preparation is the sort of thing that should be flowing through eventually to clubs as well. And that's a good way to create the pathway, I think.
That's right. And also, thank goodness for technology in terms of how we've been able to manage the sheer volume of players. I mean, I think there's over 700 players listed for these trials. Managing the communication and the information is very critical.
Oh, and online registration, I think, has been a great bonus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're listening to 2XX FM, 98.3 megahertz. Near Post Local, and we're talking to Heather Reid, CEO, Capital Football.
The other thing too, in relation to the futsal trials, we've got the futsal trials happening at the moment. Yeah. I mean, we've had a few complaints about people and saying that, you know, the futsal trials have overlapped with grand finals, etc. But I mean, I can just say we had 17 men's grand finals last weekend. We had 10 women's grand finals just on the weekend past. No time is the right time to run, whether
that's
it's outdoor programs or indoor trial programs. It's an incredibly busy season. In fact, the whole 12 months is a season for us. There's no, I mean, okay, we finish a winter football competition, but we go straight into futsal high performance program. Summer competitions, you can check the website to see that what five-a-side, six-a-side, eight-a-side summer competitions are available. So it's full on.
Indeed it is. And certainly the futsal trials I saw amongst the 11s and 12 girls were well subscribed.
Mm-hmm.
They all look like they're playing pretty good too.
That's good. Well, I know Pat had a meeting with the coaches last week.
That was very well attended,
actually. 38 coaches on board and 36 turned up for the meeting, so very positive.
Heather, let's assume, just for the sake of argument, that there's no A-League team for Canberra in the sort of immediate or foreseeable future. What do we say to parents and players about the pathway for players sort of post the high performance program, post ACTAS, not at AIS, back at club and still pining for a crack at professional football?
I think it's very important to stress that the players need to be involved in a Premier League club. If they're aspiring A-League or Youth League players, then, like it or not, they need to, if they're not already at a Premier League club, they need to move to a Premier League club. And it's one of the reasons why we restructured the Premier League, nearly 4 years ago now, so that the Premier League clubs have a responsibility to help develop and promote the pathway for male players from under 16 to under 18 to essentially under 20s, which is the pathway, and then on to open age Premier League.
And look, that's a very good point that you make there, that it's all very well for people to cry that there isn't a pathway, but if your son or daughter is languishing in a club that isn't playing Premier League football, the only person they're going to get noticed by is you.
You know, we've seen some connections between junior clubs and the senior clubs in order to facilitate that pathway for young players, whether it's a player at Radford that then makes their move through Radford through to ANU because that's the connection, or whether it's Woden Valley Junior making their connection into Woden Valley Seniors. The only club in the Premier League structure at the moment that has that true pathway within the one club from junior football at 12s, 14s, 16s, 18s is Canberra FC, and you can probably say that also is reflected in the success of Canberra FC in local competitions.
There is a point at which the peak body hands off development to someone or something else.
Yeah, the question is, where does Capital Football's responsibility start and stop in terms of the development of players? We have traditionally obviously had a responsibility for selecting players for teams that participate in national championships, and now that's boys 13s, 14s, 15s. They then move into ACTAS, AIS, etc. After the boys 15s national championships, realistically they should be going straight into a Premier League club to either play Premier 16 16s or Premier 18s, or indeed Pathway or Open Age, as many, many are doing. So for Capital Football's responsibility, do we have an under-17 high-performance squad? Do we have an under-20s high-performance squad? We have taken the decision to manage an under-17 and an under-20 summer program for boys to help with that development.
Yep.
Playing squads, or whether it's purely a development program over summer, is still a little bit up in the air. But I think it's almost settled that certainly the boys' 17s and 20s, we wouldn't take them out of their clubs and put them in a Capital Football squad to play in competition. It's not in our interest to do that, and it's not in the interest of the clubs. That's where you get this sort of tension between what's in the best interest of the player and a high-performance pathway for that player and what's in the best interest for the club going forward into next year's winter competition.
Yes, that's right. You're really operating on the limit of your area of responsibility in terms of talent development. Is that fair to say?
To some extent, yes. And what we're trying to do is just provide an additional development opportunity for those players over the summer that perhaps their clubs are not doing. However, if we go back to the point we made about the North Zone and South Zone club meetings, those players that are not picked up for, say, a Capital Football 17s program, we're only going to pick 15 to 20 players, North and South. Mm-hmm. There'll be a whole lot of other players that want to be involved in some sort of development program over summer.
Yeah.
So that means that the Belconnen United development squad, the Buds program, the Woden Valley program, the Canberra FC Academy, they all fit within this particular structure.
Yeah.
They've got to underpin what we're doing. We're not competing with them. We complement each other. We're all working together. We all have a responsibility to work together to make sure that, you know, players get the maximum amount of quality coaching and quality development opportunities throughout the whole year.
Heather, the 2010 Premier League applications are in process as we speak, and if I believe one quarter of the rumours I've heard on the sidelines or sitting in the stands in the last 3 or 4 weeks, I have absolutely no idea how that's going to be resolved. It's more complicated than Rubik's Cube. But could I start this way? What sort of club structure are you looking for to sustain the Premier League competition?
We need to make sure that the clubs can appropriately and professionally manage that pathway that we talked about, Peter, that they've got Premier 16s, they've got a capacity to put an 18s and the Premier pathway and Premier League, and we're really looking about the next 3 years. So they've got to be ready to do that now. We can't give a licence to a club that would say, oh, well, next year we'll be ready, we'll have underpinning juniors, or the year after. They've got to be ready to go with that now. They've got to have a strong community base, and the community base has to actively support rather than give lip service to that club, whether it's a single club that we talked about like Canberra FC, or whether it's a club that is having a marriage with some junior clubs such as Belconnen has a very strong relationship with Bell South and Bell North, Woden Valley Seniors, Woden Valley Juniors, Tuggeranong and Tuggeranong Juniors. Some of the other, how do I put it, marriages that have been around for the last few years, such as Canberra Olympic with Marist, that's not going to proceed from what I understand. Again,
no, that's what I've heard on the sidelines too.
it seems that Canberra Olympic is now going to be having a relationship with Majura, which puts an interesting twist on what happens with Canberra City, because they've also had a relationship with Majura. So Canberra City is looking for a partner to hold hands with.
Well, I've heard they're talking to Gin Garland.
Well, that's certainly some of the rumour that I've heard as well. ANU and Radford, I'm really not sure what's happening there. What I can say, though, is that the applications for the Premier League going forward close this week. There's a subcommittee led by George Lemon, the chairman of the Men's Standing Committee, and some other people on that review panel. They'll look at all of the applications based on the criteria that's set out, which talks about the development of the players, the community that's supporting them, the technical qualifications of people involved. There'll be minimum qualifications for coaches at each of those levels as well. The marketing, promotion, media stuff that the club does, as well as, of course, the financial capacity to sustain the four teams and anything that underpins that within the league. They'll look at all of that and make an assessment and then put recommendations to the board in October, and we expect that we'll be able to make some announcement in November. I think there are four or five clubs that outside of the current Premier League structure that are also looking at possible applications, including getting STFA from Goulburn, Cooma from the south, possibly Monero. White Eagles, I think, have perhaps made a decision not to continue with an application. I think they're probably the key four.
I'd have to say, tracking around as I did in the last 3 years with Woden Valley at the Pathways, it's no secret that some clubs just couldn't sustain their Premier League 18 and then subsequently 16 and 18s level. It showed a little bit in Pathways because, of course, everything got robbed to support the higher levels.
Personally, I'm not in favour of, how do we put it, a marriage of convenience, simply to get an application over the line.
Not a good way to start, is it?
Well, not really, and I think we've seen that, particularly... you know, with respect, if I looked at the Canberra Olympic and Marist connection, Marist being a private school, they have some very strict enrolment policies, which basically say that a kid that enrols at that school must play sport for that school, and particularly football. And so when you get requirement for the player to play for Marist in one level of football and then perhaps play for Olympic in another level of football, e.g. Premier League, there's been quite a bit of tension between the school and the club. And in fact, I have another email this morning from a parent saying, if this is true that Marist isn't going to have a connection with an Olympic kind of team or a Premier League club, then what is the pathway for the boys from Marist into Premier League? And that's a question that I'd actually put back to the school. It's a question that the board is very much aware of, and we've agreed, in fact, to meet with some of the private schools, particularly Marist and, to a lesser extent, Radford, because their enrolment policy is, in fact, potentially in conflict with the national registration policy, which says players are free to register with the club of their choice. So the conflict between an enrolment policy for a student and then the registration policy for Capital Football is pretty evident, and we need to try and address that with the schools. And that's what that's really important about what we're trying to do with the Premier League, is to make sure that the players do have freedom of access to go from 16s to 18s to 20s to open age within the club. And if there is a block, a roadblock, a firewall from 18s to pathway, so it's not really in the interest of what we're trying to do with the Premier League.
No, and it's not the same as saying in a club, look, we'll keep them at this level in order to mature them as players. That's a separate issue again.
I can say that in the preliminary assessment of the Premier League, current Premier League clubs, and the meetings and consultations that have been held, at least one of the nine clubs has basically been advised to rethink whether or not they actually want to continue in the Premier League. In other words, perhaps don't apply. One has been told they only have a small amount of the criteria to address, and then probably the there's five or so that have got a little bit more to provide, particularly those that rely on agreement, holding hands with another club, and another one that has to put in a full application. Largely because of those concerns, Peter, that you raised, the capacity to deliver a quality, competitive under 16 and under 18 team.
If we were to spin this right out to the other extreme, so in one sort of on the left-hand side we have a one fully integrated club, and right out on the other end of the spectrum is ANU, which has a different scenario for its Premier League and Pathways. It has that firewall, if you like, and Radford provides the 18s and 16s. They've all been providing very good teams. If you're in a community-based club, you look at that and say, that's an unusual arrangement. If it works, I guess it's okay, but I guess it's how much of these variations can one absorb?
I think some consideration needs to be given to a club like ANU, which is basically an education institution club that caters for adults. It doesn't have a junior base, unlike, you know, it hasn't started as a community club like a Belconnen or a Canberra FC. It started as a club to provide football for students and staff on campus.
Yeah. Well, clearly they don't get 16s and 18 players.
No, so therefore we have some understanding of the need for them to form a link with a junior club, and it is a nice fit, I think, that it is a Radford, which is again it's a college that doesn't have an alumni kind of program. Where they have graduates of at Radford playing at Radford in senior competition. The graduates of Radford sort of filter off all over the country, no doubt, and also into other teams. There is an understanding of that need for ANU men's to have a link with a junior base.
Then could I shine the light gently on the Premier League and Pathways element of that? Now, I say this with some sympathy because the solution that was put in there this year has brought quite a few of the Premier League clubs to attention, realising that they have to lift the bar in terms of their off-season offerings to players. I thought that was a good thing. Is it necessarily a good thing that one club harvests better players out of development programs.
You're talking about the ANU Under-20s Elite?
Yeah,
well, the ANU Under-20s Elite is...
I mean, players can go wherever they like.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tricky one. It's one that has been supported under the ANU FC banner. They're seeking games against the National Youth League teams with the bye. Mm. Ideally, it could include players from other clubs who wish to go and guest appear for ANU FC in those games. There are some fairly strict guidelines around how ANU manages the team, the selection of the players, and the registration of those players. And
well, I suppose most of us don't know anything about that. So.
It's a very new thing, and it's a trial. I mean, it comes back to that question I said before about if Capital Football isn't providing a competition opportunity for an ACT. Mm. High performance under 20s,
yeah.
Then devolve or enable a club to take responsibility for that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't preclude a Canberra FC from doing the same or a Belconnen or
absolutely.
A Woden. It's an initiative that's come from ANU that has been supported with some guidelines around it, as I said. That's our start for doing something for under 20s within our real core business, which is running competitions.
Thanks very much, Heather. Everyone might have thought that football stopped with the grand finals. It couldn't be further from the truth.
No,
it's
I know
ticking
that.
Over 24/7 here.
It has been a hectic time, but it's been really enjoyable, Peter, and I congratulate all the clubs that have done well in the grand finals.
Very generous with your time, Heather. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
And if you're heading for the near post, get there first. No sense in getting there second. Ball will be in the back of the net. See you next week. Listen to the podcast. Enjoy your football and your futsal. I need a big weekend. Kick up the dust.